afternoon. I'm Ross Kaminsky, live and local here on KOA News Radio. 2 days after Governor Polis announced, well, 3 days after he announced, 2 days after it came into force, a stay-at-home order for the state of Colorado, although for a stay-at-home order, it does seem there's still quite a few cars on the road, but talk about that later. Obviously, what everybody wants to know is, how are we going to beat this thing? What are the tactics? What are the tools? What is the strategery, one of my favorite words, to beat this thing? And of course, one of the industries that's going to help us beat this thing is biotechnology. And so I am very pleased and privileged to be joined by Dr. Jeremy Levin, who is chairman of the board of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization. He is also chairman and CEO of Ovid Therapeutics and former CEO of Teva Pharmaceuticals, one of the biggest generic drug companies in the world. Dr. Levin is MD and PhD. Just trust me, he's the real deal. Doctor, good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Ross. Very nice to speak to you.
Let's start with the big picture. As a, what's the word, biotechnologist? Is that a correct word?
That's a good word, like.
as a biotechnologist, before getting into the nitty-gritty of coronavirus itself, if someone said to you, hey, doc, we, you know, there's a new virus. What's the first way you start thinking about how to tackle a new virus?
Well, we've been here before, so we've known how to deal with a new virus. We've had waves of them. The point was we weren't prepared for this one. We were worried, very much worried, that a brand new virus would come, spread rapidly, and have a high mortality and morbidity. And that's exactly what we're seeing here. But we didn't learn from the last 3 to 4 different episodes that we had. As it currently stands, the first thing that comes to mind is if it's a brand new virus, is it completely different from anything else we've seen before? And that the answer is here, yes. If that's the case, what's the tools that we have in our toolbox to fight it on day one? How do we then fight it on day 2, 3, 4, 5? And then, much more importantly, are we expecting it to come back? And if so, what are we going to do to stop it then?
Okay, I want to follow up on something you said in that answer that I thought was really interesting. When you asked the semi-rhetorical question, is this something brand new that we've never, ever seen before? I actually thought you might say no, in the sense that we apparently haven't seen this coronavirus, this specific coronavirus, and that's why it's called the novel coronavirus, but we've seen plenty of other coronaviruses. So in your own mind, again, as a biotechnologist, do you think of this as something that is truly brand new, or do you think of it as something that is similar enough to things we've faced before that it's only kind of sort of new?
Ross, if you're out hunting a whitetail and you see an elk and you see a moose, they've all got 4 legs and horns, but they're different. So each one is unique. You have to understand it. You have to really be able to understand what it means to get close to it and then to tackle it. This coronavirus is different from any that has been before. It spreads very much more rapidly. We understand that it spreads upwards of 1,000 times more effectively than what we've seen in the common flu. And we have the common flu. We know it. It's an enemy which we fought for many years, and we will probably never defeat it in the near term. And it's coming back. Coronavirus has suddenly introduced itself as a much more vigorous opponent to us. So we need to treat it as something brand new and understand how to tackle it in the same way that we learned how to tackle some of these other previous events that we've tackled, Ebola, H1N1, SARS.
Right. And that's kind of what I was thinking of, SARS and MERS, other coronaviruses, more deadly than this one if you catch it, but, you know, .. all the different comparisons. So are lessons from SARS and MERS out there that we could have or still could and should apply to this? Or again, are we kind of starting over other than just basic things that you would do to fight any virus?
No, good question. Very good question. Actually, we learned a lot. We learned how to quickly get hold of the DNA, the genes of, not the DNA, the RNA of these particular entities. We know how to quickly assess what are the most important parts of this virus we should be attacking. And we learned that from the previous past episodes. Now, had we not learned those, we'd be starting from scratch and trying to scratch our head and say what's important. So we know what's important in this virus. It's definitely tackleable. This is one which we can definitely bring to the ground. The point is that took a long time to get going, having not focused on what we saw in China and understanding that it was going to come to America and come with an avalanche. And so we have the tools. We definitely have the tools to tackle it. We learned from those before. The most important of this is that, one, we know what it looks like. We can rapidly pick out what's important. Number two, we know that the way to prevent it spreading from one person to the next right now is to keep as isolated as you can. Number three, we have actually in our armamentarium a lot of different medicines that might be able to tackle it, but we need real evidence to jump on those and find the clinical trials that demonstrate it. And then number four, we sure know that there are many different very novel ways of developing vaccines which will eventually have the chance of actually preventing it coming back and tackling us.
My very special guest, Dr. Jeremy Levin, is chairman of the board of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization. The vaccine question is a very interesting one, and I share your optimism that we will almost certainly have a vaccine, although I don't know why I'm quite that optimistic, because I don't think they ever actually developed a vaccine for SARS, did they?
No, and that's, I think, when we look back on this period of time, we'll have to ask some really hard questions. Why didn't we? Why were we not prepared? We know that the defense establishment has a superb research capability. They must have studied this. We know they did study it. We know that in their data banks, there is understanding of how you can bring out different molecules, medicines that aren't yet medicines, but you can certainly be ready to tackle it, a virus like this. Because, of course, viruses like this were always studied by people with very bad intent a long time ago. And we in America developed tremendous ability to counteract that. So when we look back on this moment, we'll ask, why did we not have ready the ability to generate a vaccine for this? And we should have. I think we'll ask ourselves that hard question afterwards. Right now, it's important to look forward and ask the question, what can we do right now, right here, and in the midterm and the near term?
Normally, when you think about a new treatment for something, whether it is something that you would truly think of as an immediate treatment / cure versus a longer term vaccine kind of thing, normally, if you're making something new, it has to go through a long FDA process. Primarily, actually, a lot of the stuff that takes a long time is proving safety, even more than proving efficacy. So what do you think that path looks like for actual approval, and how fast-tracked could a fast track be if we're trying to get approval for a vaccine for this thing?
Well, one of the great things about the FDA is that it is able to do this. We've already seen that it can fast-track diagnostics. We've already seen that it's okay the number of trials to get going so that it can supervise and think about them and understand what's going on. So by putting the resources to a trial where you are not in a long queue of other companies trying to develop a drug, you can definitely speed it up. And you should appreciate that in the FDA, there is superb expertise. This is an expertise which has been honed over dozens of years. And it is the best in the world. So when they focus their attention and are able to do it and are given the resources to that, the FDA can turn on a dime and can speed these trials up. Now, what particularly could help us is that because we have so many patients in being admitted, that means patients' enrollment into these trials, which is typically very long-standing and takes time, will be speeded up. Assessment of this particular, of the effect of any one drug will be speeded up. That said, there are certain basics. You want to know that any kind of vaccine won't generate an untoward reaction. The way vaccines work is they mobilize the body's defenses, and they mobilize the body's defense to fight off something. Well, you don't want to mobilize it too much. You want to mobilize it just perfectly for that virus. And the real trick is finding the right kind of mobilization that will tackle the virus. Now, we did this, of course, in different kinds. We defeated polio completely. We have a process absolutely to tackle every year a new kind of flu. And we'll do the same here. I mean, this time we'll have to do it a lot faster. And by putting the resources to it, I'm confident that the FDA can and has all the tools to assess the safety in a rapid form and understand how we can get the fastest possible vaccine. That said, Ross, let's not kid ourselves. This is not a five or six week thing. This is a 5 to 6 month at best, and probably a year before we have that vaccine. I think we need to understand that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it doesn't matter if I agree. You're the expert, and I'm not. Are you? The error bars around this answer or this question are pretty darn wide. But what is your level of optimism that a treatment will be found for this based on existing well-known and well-understood medications? You know, we've heard about chloroquine combined with azithromycin, and I guess they're trying it out in New York right now, and maybe we'll get some results from that in the next couple of days. What's your level of optimism, or is this really, am I asking you just to generate a random number, basically?
Please don't worry. You're not asking me to generate. That's a very important question. Chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine are but one of many different medicines. The real question is there something out there today that will kill off this virus? Not sure. There's a company called Gilead that's taking a look at this quickly. It's got one particular medicine which might work. We've heard a lot of talk about chloroquine and hydroxychloroquine. No original proof positive clinical data that it actually does this. However, having said that, what's really interesting is that there's good indications that hydroxychloroquine has an ability to do certain things that might be helpful. We need to prove that. And the only way to prove that is a rigorous, and I mean a rigorous clinical trial. Otherwise, we're running into the problems that we saw with this poor family down in Arizona who resulted in where there's a death of a family who took inappropriately chloroquine, which was designed for a pet, not at all appropriate.
Let's be
careful of that. You've got to have the right dose. You've got to look at it carefully. Now, with regard to other medicines, there's a really exciting set of medicines which we haven't even really dived into, and I'm certain we will do very quickly. There are medicines which are responsible for increasing the ability of your body to fight any kind of problem that of immunology, anything that is that will raise the level of your ability to fight off infections. And there are a whole series of drugs of that kind. None of those have been fully tested. They're all going to be tested now. And my assessment of that, out of these, we are likely to find something that has a partial effect. In the same way that we fought off initially cancer, you could actually improve cancer. You didn't cure it. Now we know you can cure cancer. You can definitely cure cancer using new tools that enhance the body's ability to fight it. So by enhancing the body's ability to fight an infection, a viral infection, you may have the same result.
What is that class of drugs called?
There's a group which is called the rapamycin-type drugs. These are the ones that were used for a variety of different things originally, but they're now advancing, and they're not advancing in the clinic yet, but they will come forward. Those types of drugs, there's a whole class of them. Their whole goal is to increase the ability of an older person to fight off infections.
Wow.
And there's a number of different ones. So that is an area which will definitely be looked at.
My very special guest is Dr. Jeremy Levin, chairman of the board of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization. Now, I can tell from your accent that you grew up somewhere around Vail or Beaver Creek, right?
Yeah, just a couple miles out, right?
Just a couple miles out. Western Cape of South Africa, you were born and then moved somewhere?
Yeah, I come from a little farming valley in the middle of nowhere. It's a beautiful valley. It's called Picketburg. A tiny valley where we farmed, and we still are farmers, actually, to this day. We lived there, and then we left to a country which was then called Rhodesia, and again left there, and have lived in multiple different countries until I got here 33, 34 years ago. And boy, never wanted to go anywhere else.
Is Picketburg in Rhodesia / Zimbabwe or South Africa?
Picketburg, the Western Cape.
Western Cape.
The small, tiny little village, and probably resembles Gunnison, only smaller.
How far from Cape Town?
It's about 100 miles north of Cape Town.
Excellent. Near Stellenbosch at all?
You're right. You have to go through Stellenbosch. You have to look at those wines and pass by and go to where the real farmers are.
Where the real farmers are. That's funny. Yeah, I like Stellenbosch. I had some great wine and great food there. The reason I bring up your Colorado mountain accent is, and we got about probably 4 minutes left here. You mentioned before we went on the air that you have some particular knowledge and information about what's going on here in Colorado, and particularly in the mountain counties, that people may not be thinking of those as hot spots, but they are.
Yeah, you have beautiful spots in Colorado, some of the most beautiful in the world, actually. One of the ones that I know incredibly well and have been part of the community of for over nearly now 30 years is in Crested Butte. And so I know Gunnison County real well. But even there, as you had so many people coming in and out, that bringing in from other parts of the country, you've had instances now, I believe, close to 50 people testing positive and one death in the county. This is tragic. And it only brings to mind the real imperative that this, number one, that this virus is everywhere. Number two, that the best way to tackle it is to be isolated, to keep yourself away from other people. And number three, even the most wonderful-looking and best places should consider themselves vulnerable and should understand that by taking the best precautions they can, they'll prevent it spreading further.
From a medical point of view, and leaving out anything about politics or constitutional rights or anything like that, is there any doubt in your mind that something like a stay-at-home order is the most effective way to combat this virus at this time?
Zero.
Zero doubt.
Zero doubt. I think this is, when we have an unknown like this, there are moments when, with an invisible enemy, one where you don't have a weapon to fight it, and you're not sure when the next weapon's coming along, but you do know that it will pass by. An infective question like this, one that has the infectivity of this, the best possible thing is to isolate yourself, wash your hands, make sure that you are very conscientious of how you treat others, that you keep away from those who may have been infected, and those who are infected, isolate themselves. The vast majority of people here, let's not forget this, the vast majority of people here will pass through this, may get infected, but it may well and will definitely recover from this. A small percentage will demise, and that's very, you want to avoid that. You want to minimize that as much as possible. So keep the vulnerable safe. Make sure that the older people are not exposed. Make sure that everybody, when they come into your home, washes their hands, and that you yourself are completely, you don't touch your face. The kinds of things that that we don't really think about day to day, but that you should be thinking about today.
As you said that, I was sitting here behind the microphone with my hand like under my chin, my chin sitting in my hand, elbow on the desk. I'm like, oh, no, I'm touching my face. Oh, boy.
I once went on the net just to try and find out how many times we do actually touch our face. I've seen figures ranging from 50 to 200 times a day. It's astonishing. If those are true, then, it's a tough habit to break.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed. All right, Doctor, we're going to leave it there. Dr. Jeremy Levin, he's chairman of the board of the Biotechnology Innovation Organization. He is chairman and CEO of Ovid Therapeutics, and before that, he ran Teva Pharmaceuticals. Doctor, thank you so much for taking time out of your weekend to be with us. I'm really grateful.
It's a pleasure, Ross, and good luck to you, and keep safe, and everybody else out there, really, you've got a fantastic, fabulous state, and it's going to be just as fabulous when this passes by.
Yes. From your mouth to God's ears. Thank you, Doctor. We'll talk again.